Hello, folks, and welcome to this week's episode of the Moving to Orlando show. Coming up, we're going to talk about our predictions for the 2021 Orlando housing market coming up next. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Moving to Orlando show. Coming to you from the Bob Varley Studio in Orlando, Florida, I'm your host, Pete Werner. Joined this week, as always, by my good friend and awesome realtor, Mr. Sean Falk.
Hey.
And my good friend and awesome producer, Mr. Corey Fiascanaro.
Welcome.
And also joining us in the studio for these shows, kind of off camera, is our new intern, Drake Shadwell. You'll be seeing a little bit of him. He's getting inappropriately close to me. So just wanted to, let you know there's somebody else in the room. So watch what you say. All right. So before we get started, just a reminder to everybody that since this is our first show of 2021, this show is only showing up now on the Moving to Orlando YouTube channel. So if you are watching this, chances are that is where you are seeing it. And while you are here, if you could just do us a favor, if you've not already hit the subscribe button to subscribe to our channel, please go ahead and do that. Also, that little thumbs up is the like button. If you can hit that for us as well, those two things really, really help us out a lot with YouTube and says, hey, we like this channel. We like this content. And then YouTube suggests us to more people. And then our fragile little egos are stroked. We decided for the first show of the new year, talk about what we thought the housing market in Orlando was going to look like in 2021. And I've done a lot of research. I have some stats and facts and figures to throw at you, but we're going to let Sean start off with some of his thoughts on where the housing market's going to go this year.
I think it's going really, really well. It's been going great this year. I think it's going to be even more so for 2021. Well, I guess 2020, this is airing in 2021. But so I think this year is actually going to be even better than last year was as far as the housing market goes. And especially as vaccines roll out, more people are going to be able to come to the area and actually see things in person that they weren't able to see before. We've done a lot of virtual showings in 2020. I think we'll still be doing a lot of virtual showings, but for the most part, people will actually be able to come in person, which is awesome because, you know, 50th anniversary for Disney World's this year, starts this year, and people will be able to get down here to either make purchases or do what they need to do before then.
That's a very good point. That you look at this market that we've had in 2020, which has been insane, right? It's the busiest year I think we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And this is what it looks like when travel is restricted.
Yeah.
When people are not traveling nearly as much as they have in the past. Mm-hmm. And we know just from the contacts we have with people, the amount of interest there is.
Yeah.
For 2021, we're getting a lot of it on our website, movingtoorlando.com. There's a little contact us link in the menu bar that you can hit, fill out some information, and one of us will get back to you. But so we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of that right now. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. I think it's going to be insane.
I mean, I think that's really going to be the main stuff. People tend to move in the spring more than anything else. So, I mean, spring should be really busy. Little different this year just because typically a lot of people want to wait for the kids to get out of school before they make moving decisions. But that hasn't been as big of a factor. I do think a lot of places will stay virtual for schooling and throughout the rest of this school year. So that does make the transition a little easier for a lot of people. And especially if you're going to build, whereas like usually the build, you're timing that out because you want to make sure it finishes in the summertime when kids are out of school. So they're ready for the next school year. This year, not as big of a deal. So especially in new builds, I think we'll see a huge uptick in those. And especially as things get moving again and prices come back down a little bit on lumber and all that, because all of these inventory problems that have caused materials to spike is because people have not been able to go to work the way they usually would because plants are shut down and all that kind of stuff. So,
right. And, you know, one thing I think that you mentioned that is that we don't know what the long-term impacts of some of these changes we've had to make due to the illness. We don't want to say the C word. Are going to be. So, you know, a lot of people now working from home, working remotely. A lot of companies are saying, hey, wait a second, this is working out pretty good. Why am I spending, you know, $50,000 a month on office space when we can work our business like this? Now, obviously, that's not going to work for all businesses, but in a lot of cases, I know even for us, even though we all work remotely, we've worked remotely since the very beginning on the Disney side of my business. We've worked remotely from the very beginning. But, you know, even with doing shows, I mean, right now we're in the studio, but a lot of the shows we're doing over Skype, we're doing remotely. And it spawned a lot of ideas for ways to do shows. And ways to do things differently. And I think a lot of companies are probably going to carry that on, which also makes it easier for people to make the move if they can keep their job and telecommute, basically.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be really interesting. And that's a years from now thing, like 50 years from now, people will be able to look back at homes built in this time period and see, you know, oh, all these houses have offices in them. Whereas, you know, if you talk 2000s, you're getting a formal living room. Like you go in, there's this extra living room that a lot of people are like, oh, what do I do with this space? Or like years and years ago, the kitchen was always at the very back of the house so that staff and help and people could come in through the back of the home. And that things change over time as like society changes. And so
not for my kitchen, but I think maybe I should do that. Make all my staff come in through the back.
Through the back. Yeah. But we, so now, of course, before everything happened, offices were not on anyone's really high priority list. Very rarely was somebody asking about an office. And, they were mainly just discussing, you know, what do I do with this extra formal living room space? But they didn't want to spend the extra money to have it walled in to actually be an office space. So now I just think we're at a point where people are spending it, or a lot of builders are just making that the upgrade automatically now. So that's more commonplace to just say, hey, get rid of the formal living room completely, and it's automatically going to be an office.
Okay, so let's talk about what some of the predictions are for 2021. The National Association of Realtors says their research is indicating that they are expecting the price of homes, and this is nationwide, this is not necessarily just Orlando, to climb by 8% next year, an increase in price of 8% next year, and another increase of 5.5% in 2022. I keep saying next year because we're recording this in December 2020. So it's, you're seeing it, it's the new year. Mm-hmm. So when I say next year, I should say this year, 2021, they're expecting prices to climb by about 8% and 5.5% in 2022. One of the issues driving the prices and the price increases here in Orlando is the historically low amount of inventory that we have in homes. So we talk about inventory, we mean number of available homes to sell versus the demand to buy them. Right now in November, which is the last month that we have data for as we're recording this, we had 1.7 months worth of inventory, which means if no houses ever went on sale again, we would have a month and a half, a little more than a month and a half worth of homes to sell before there'd be no homes left. That is very, very, very low inventory, which, again, you have demand versus inventory drives up the prices. Also, with mortgage rates, one of the things driving a lot of the sale of homes right now are these incredibly low mortgage rates. As of the time of this recording, average mortgage rate is 2.7%. And the Federal Reserve has said it has no intention of raising the prime rate anytime soon. So we're expecting these mortgage rates to remain in this range for the foreseeable future. But one of the things I really wanted to talk about, and because I hear this, I see it online a lot, I hear it from people all the time, I'm just waiting for the market to crash because, you know, it's going to crash the way it did in 2008. No, it's not. It is really important for people to understand the difference between what's happening right now and what happened in 2008. 2008 happened because bad mortgages were being written on ridiculously overpriced houses. People were buying houses they couldn't afford. And as massive foreclosures came in, people think they're going to pick up these homes in a fire sale. So I did some research. There are currently 50 million homes in the United States that carry a mortgage. Roughly 6% of those are in forbearance, right? So that's about 3 million homes. Only 3% of those properties have negative equity. That means they're underwater. It means the value of the home is less than what's owed on it. That was the issue in 2008. These homes were underwater, so people were just walking away from them. But ask yourself this question. If you have a house, you owe $230,000 on your mortgage, and your house is worth $280,000 on the open market, are you going to let that house go into foreclosure, or are you going to sell it and pay off your loan? You're going to sell it and pay off your loan. These houses are not going to go into foreclosure. It's not the same as 2008.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who don't understand what happened in 2008. And like, even for me, I didn't, because I was like still in school. It didn't affect me. And it was a situation where because it sounds similar whenever you just say, oh, people were getting houses that were ridiculously overpriced and they couldn't afford them. They couldn't actually afford them. It was also a situation where lenders were lending money for these homes when they shouldn't have been. The people weren't qualified for the loans. But at that time, there weren't regulations like there are now to say, hey, you can't do that anymore. Because now there's multiple steps. And you'll see, like when you're buying the house, it's got to go through underwriting. It's got to go through the processor. It's got to go. There's so many more checks and balances and fact checking that has to happen. Whereas honestly, before 2008, you literally could say, I make this amount of money. And you didn't have to fit every single criteria of like having cash on hand, having collateral, having, you know, good credit. They would just kind of pick out one or two things and be like, well, your credit's bad and you seem to not pay stuff back as well, but you have a lot of cash on hand, so we'll just go ahead and do it. Like, we'll go ahead and give you the loan. And they don't do that anymore. That's not allowed anymore. So there's right. much and, stricter regulation,
you know,
now.
As a result of the crash in 2008, a lot of laws were enacted to prevent that kind of abuse, because it was really predatory behavior on the part of these lenders. And irresponsible behavior, let's be honest, irresponsible behavior on the part of the buyers too. That, you know, somebody's saying, oh, here's cheap money for you. We don't care whether you can pay it back or not. Rather than saying, you know, hey, look, that looks great and I really want that house, but I really can't afford it. You know, people are like, sure, let's go. Mm-hmm. So there was two sides to that coin. But those laws now really have been very effective in terms of the kind of mortgages that get approved, kind of qualifications. So we don't have all these subprime mortgages out there. That is what brought the housing market low. And, you know, people are saying that because as a result of the CARES Act, they were not allowed, banks were not allowed to initiate foreclosures until 2021. And of course, at the time you're seeing this, here's 2021. So all these foreclosures are coming through. You're talking about very few homes that really are ripe for foreclosure in the United States right now. And I think it's probably even less here in Orlando, but I don't have stats to prove that. What we do know is the sold dollar volume of homes in Orlando in 2020 went up by almost 17%. Sold $50 billion worth of homes versus $43 billion in 2019. The average price of a home went up by 9% from $283,000 to $309,000. The average days on market dropped by 11%. So, you know, and this was during one of the most challenging years, just from the standpoint of travel, just from the standpoint of getting here to look at homes. And that's how it was. There's still all this pent up demand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to start to see that, as Sean mentioned, now with vaccines and some things happening in terms of the pandemic, we're going to start seeing more people able to come here and able to get started.
Yeah. And I think
searching for homes.
Oh, yeah. And I think part of that with foreclosures as well. If you're an investor and you're somebody who's extensively worked with short sales and foreclosures, you know what you're doing and you're somebody who has the background knowledge to do that. If you don't, I mean, every now and then I get people that are like, oh, I'm a first time home buyer. So like, what is it? Like, what about these foreclosures or short sales or whatever? If you don't know what you're doing there, you're in for a really, really long road. I mean, it takes about a year, like 9 months to a year to close on one. And just because, even then, just because something says it's a short sale does not mean that the lender has actually agreed to that price. So if it says, oh, short sale and this great house is $200,000, there's no guarantee on there unless it specifically states it that a judge has already approved or the lender or anything has already approved this price. Oh, if we can sell it for this price, we'll accept that. Essentially, they can put it out there, say, oh, we'll short sell our house. You make the offer, you say, yes, we'll pay that amount. And then it has to be approved. Will they accept that as the option? So, it's not as easy as saying, oh, here's this house. It's a great deal. These people are underwater on it. So like, let's swoop in and get it. Also, because of how few there's going to be, if you don't have cash to buy it, you're probably not going to buy it. So, getting a loan for that, it's not that you can't get the loan. It's just that there's other people who are ready with cash to swoop in and buy what foreclosures and short sales will be available. So if you have the cash to do it, it may be a good option. But if you are needing a loan, if conventional or especially if it's FHA or whatever, you're really going to be in for a rough time if you want to try to get those foreclosure homes.
Yeah. Short sale doesn't mean quick sale.
No.
That's for sure. All right. So yeah, the other thing I'm hearing a lot of, and I think you've heard this too, people that were looking at homes at the beginning of 2020 who said, you know what? I'm going to wait. The beginning of the pandemic, I'm going to wait because I think the price of these houses is going to come down, are kicking themselves right now because the prices have done nothing but go up and go up at a rate that really is historically very strong, not unheard of, but it's historically very strong. So those of you saying, oh, I'm going to wait for the big crash before I buy my... Now, look, we're reading tea leaves here. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Right? Right now, the indicators that would suggest that are just not pointing in that direction. They're just not pointing in that direction. If we were looking at a bunch of houses that were overpriced and loans that were not solid, I would be saying something different. But we're not. We're not looking at that. Now, it doesn't mean there aren't other factors that can come into play. Nobody in December of last year was talking about a global pandemic. But think about it. Even in a global pandemic, even with the economy taking the hit that our economy has taken, hasn't hurt the housing market. Not really.
Yeah, it's funny because I bought my house in 2017 and I was sure when I bought it, it was like February. So it was really early in 2017. I was 100% sure that I was buying at the absolute peak of home prices. I was terrified that things were going to crash because like 2011, 2012, it was so inexpensive. And the price of my home, because the last time it had sold was in 2011. And so my home price was like, I mean, maybe 80, 90,000 more than what it had sold for in 2011 and at the actual absolute bottom of things. And so I bought my house for 178 and I was like, oh, I'm way overspending. I feel, you know, I'm so nervous about this. And of course now, cut to last month, my neighbor's house just sold and they sold for $239 on their house. And their house is the exact same square footage, the exact same bedrooms, and a way lesser version of my house because I went over there and looked at it whenever because I had to go see what the competition was. And they had like, they did not have granite countertops. They didn't have nice floors like mine. They do have a pool. So like that is a good plus for them. But still, it was really shocking to be like, wow, I can't believe they actually got $239,000 for that house. Cause compared to when I was looking 3 years ago and, you know, again, people think, oh, now we're at the peak. And I'm like, you don't know when it is really. I'm glad I bought when I did.
You bring up something that's important though. And especially because of, you know, you're a millennial. Mm-hmm. Millennials came of age during the Great Recession. And, you know, when you said I was terrified that, you know, I was buying at the peak and that's a real impact on people and not just millennials, but for millennials, I think it's even bigger because of as you were coming into adulthood. This was what was going on. This crazy was going on. Anybody impacted though by 2008 significantly, anybody who lost a house, anybody whose, you know, job was wiped out because of the economy. That leaves a scar.
Yeah. I mean, we had the bubble burst twice on us because my family in 2004, 2005 range, we lived in California and, you know, the house we were in at that point, the bubble burst there. So we, you know, my parents lost their jobs and we had to move back to the East Coast. We moved back to North Carolina and then the bubble burst on the East Coast a couple years later. So, because it took a little bit for it to work its way back through. So literally we hit it from both sides of the country with that as the thing. So by the time I got to the point where I'm like, okay, I can buy a house. I'm like, oh, I need to make sure that I'm not buying at the wrong time. So
do you think, Sean, that through 2021, that prices on homes are going to continue to increase at the rate that they've increased this year? We see median sold price of a home in November up 13.4%. We've seen those numbers pretty consistently throughout the year. I mean, the average sold price up 9%. So this year, the average price of a home sold in Orlando, in the Central Florida area, 9% increase over 2019. Do you think we're going to see less than that, around that, or more than that when 2022 rolls around?
I think we're going to end up seeing more of that. And my reason behind it is because of who is moving to the area. And Texas and Arizona are going through the same thing because Californians are moving to Arizona and Texas a lot. And then the Northeast and the Midwest are tending to move to Florida. And because of how much in the Northeast you have to pay for taxes, on your property taxes, people are moving here and saying, oh, you know what? My property taxes are a third or half of what they were. And so I can take that money and I might be willing to pay $5,000, $10,000 over the appraised value of the home, and in order to get in it. I've had it happen tons of times in 2020 where people were like, yeah, I'll give $5,000 over. That's no problem. Because they're saving so much money and on the property value, on the property taxes, but also the home prices are so much cheaper here than they are in Boston or New York or Philly or what, you know, these places that home prices get insane, and they can move down here, live right by Disney, live in the warmth, you know, be where they want to be and still have a good paying job from back in the Northeast, but also a much cheaper house. They can get more house for their money. So people are willing to spend over the asking price. And that's really the issue, because when your home gets appraised, it goes based on what else sold in the area. And I talk to people about it who are buying homes, because they're like, oh, should I get closing costs, concessions, should I get money off the house, whatever. For me, I would rather pay full price for the home if I can afford to, or even over asking on the house, rather, and take closing costs, concessions, because those, that money doesn't really go anywhere, like towards the value specifically. But if you keep your value high, your home becomes a comp for other homes in the area. And, you know, if now I got it for $300,000, other people will see, oh, they sold their house for $300,000, so I can sell my house for $300,000, and they may get $305,000, and now we can sell them for $305,000. And it helps things climb in that way. And because Northeastern people will pay over, it's going to start climbing those up. That's my thought.
Well, we're going to find out. So we're going to have to do a show in January of 2022, where we take a look at what we said here,
yeah,
and we see like how accurate
did it work, yeah.
But that is going to do it, folks, for this week's episode of our show. Just a reminder: if you do need the assistance of a realtor, please reach out to us. You can reach out to Sean directly, Sean S-E-A-N at movingtoorlando.com, or you can just go to our website, movingtoorlando.com. Look for the contact us link up top and fill out that form, and someone will be in touch shortly. So thanks, folks. Happy New Year, and until next week.